Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. My guest today in studio here in New York, ESPN NBA draft analyst Jonathan Givony. We talk about this crop of rookie players, the emergence of Donovan Mitchell in Utah, Jason Tatum in Boston, and of course Lonzo Ball with the Lakers. We talk about what the future may hold for Lonzo Ball's younger brothers trying to play overseas. And then the potential for new NBA draft legislation change, some of the perhaps unintended consequences of changing the one and done rule, how it could impact young players adversely, as well as the opportunities that might be there for them, and how Jonathan puts together a mock draft for ESPN. Great visit with Jonathan Givony. Here we go. Here in our New York studio with Jonathan Givony. Jonathan, how are you?
Doing great, Woj. How about yourself?
I'm good. I always like doing this with you. Your last 30, 40 days, give me your travel itinerary scouting.
Well, I started off the year with a bang, the Champions Classic in Chicago, Duke, Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky. Great way for the college season to kick off. Had the PK 80 in Portland, which was a brand new event. Fantastic. 16 teams were out there. And, just been, you know, traveling around New York here. There have been, you know, a bunch of games at the Garden, at the Barclays, been doing some bigger ones, some smaller ones, Jimmy V. I'm going to Europe in 10 days. I'll be out there for 11 days. And, we'll go, you know, check in on Doncic, check in on Musa, check out some new guys that are kind of creeping up. Some youth tournaments, kind of stuff that I love doing.
And also Fordham, Harvard at Rose Hill Gym on a Tuesday night in December. What, I saw your Twitter feed the other night and there's part of me going, what are you doing?
That may have been a mistake, but you never know. I mean, you gotta beat the bushes sometimes. And there's, Seth Towns had 25 points against Kentucky. He looked like a 6'8", a combo forward who can shoot threes. And as I went out to the, it's not hard to get out to the Bronx. And so I did it. And at halftime, it was like 21-22, the score, something like that. Like, what am I doing here? I'm not exactly sure, but, it was fun. And you never know what you're going to find in gyms like that. So you gotta do it.
What's the greatest goose chase you've ever gone on for a player? The farthest place you went that where you expected to see something great and you went, holy cow, what did I come here for this guy for?
Well, it was Giannis Antetokounmpo's birthday yesterday, so maybe we should mention that one. That was a fun goose chase. When I went there...
That one worked out great. You found a future Hall of Famer. I'm saying where you just went and guy couldn't play at all, just a complete disaster. What am I doing here?
Oh, I've been to some bad places in Eastern Europe, Ukraine. I mean, dangerous places that you probably shouldn't have been in. And you get there and you watch the guy and you're like, what in the world did I just do? I just spent a lot of money and a lot of time getting here. But that's part of the game. I mean, that's what makes it fun. And that's what, you know, when you do find that Giannis guy, you know, and you're the first one to be able to write about someone like that, that it makes it worthwhile.
Tell me that story, the story of how you got tipped off on Giannis and then the process of going to connect with the people, get to the gym, and then what you saw the first time you walk in, because you really knew about him before anybody in the NBA did, right?
The summer before Giannis blew up or entered the draft was when his agent, Yorgos Dimitropoulos, reached out to me and said, hey, I got a kid. He's very intriguing. You should take a look at him. He sent me the video. It was incredibly grainy. Giannis was about 6'6 at that point. Rail thin, you know, the video started off with this huge dunk and I was like, wow, I mean, this guy is interesting. Let me track him. But he was playing in like the ninth division in Greece and it was a very low level of competition, but I definitely followed that one away and I said, I want to keep tracking this guy and see what happens. And, you know, the season started and you started to hear some buzz coming out of Greece and some scouts went out there. I think Danny Ainge was really the first GM to actually go there, and that was a big story. And I booked my travel. I said, I got to take a look at this guy. I'm not sure what he is. I mean, his numbers were not good in the second division, and a lot of scouts were very pessimistic about him. They said he's not very athletic, and he's, you know, he can't even dominate a poor league like the, you know, the Greek second division. And I went to actually see him in a junior competition, and I was there with Antonio Macieras from the Los Angeles Lakers, who I consider one of the best international scouts in the game. And we were just looking at each other. We're like, holy smokes, this guy is unbelievable. And I mean, right there, I said, I have to interview him. I have to get as much video as I can. We have to get the story out. And we did. And, you know, there was still a lot of skepticism. It wasn't until Giannis played really well at a tournament in Italy, around the Euro camp, when he really kind of established himself as a first round pick. And, you know, the Hawks, you know, the great story, Wes Wilcox. I mean, he was the only guy that brought him in for a workout. He got his physical. He shut him down. He was supposed to draft him at 19. It was a done deal. But the Bucks came in and swooped him away, and, you know, the rest is history.
It's amazing. It's one of those, like, it's like you said, it's why you go to these outlying places. It's why you get on planes and you drive, you know, through mountainsides and you know, overseas, because you never know what you might find. One guy, and I wanted to start here with a couple guys from the June draft. I think very clearly the biggest surprise in this rookie class is Donovan Mitchell in Utah, who the Jazz, you know, literally when they had him in for the workout, they were so blown away by what they saw. I think Dennis Lindsay literally went around to everybody in the gym and said, you know, essentially, if you tell anybody what we just saw in here, you're all fired. And I think he was only half joking. Didn't want the world to know how strongly they felt about him. And, you know, they move up in the draft at 13 to get him. You saw in summer league, like, hey, he has a chance to be pretty good. He looks like a star. It looks like they have found, there was a lot of despondency in that organization with the loss of Gordon Hayward, but he is so far ahead of where Gordon Hayward was as a rookie. What did you see in him last year at Louisville? Would you have imagined this in his rookie year?
Well, he's from right down the street from here. He's from Connecticut. And so I saw him growing up. I think the first time I saw him was he was a sophomore in high school. He was a little bit pudgy then. He was a baseball player who had converted to play basketball. He was extremely athletic, but he was not very skilled, and he had a lot to learn at that point about how to play hard all the time. But I remember interviewing him at an Under Armour event and just being blown away by his character, by how intelligent he was. That interview is still up on YouTube. And I mean, he knew exactly what his strengths and weaknesses were. He knew exactly what he needed to work on. And he just went and got better and better. I remember, you know, looking forward to seeing him as a freshman at Louisville. And he had a rough season. It was not, you know, he definitely had to come back for his sophomore year. And he made a huge jump between his freshman and sophomore year, improved dramatically as a shooter, improved his ball handling, became a real lockdown defender, which I didn't think he was as a freshman. So, I mean, that's a great example of the trajectory that different guys are on. You have to watch them when they're young. You have to keep following them. You have to get to know them as people, because that plays a huge role in why he's developed into who he is. Because on terms of intangibles, I mean, he's was probably number one guy in the draft. I remember, you know, there's a service that does, you know, psychological profiling of players, and those guys thought, by far, he was the best player in the draft. I mean, they had no doubt he was going to pan out. And you could see that, you know, we knew on draft night that that's where he was going to go. I remember being angry that I had him we went 10 for 10, our first 10 picks. And then at 11, I had Donovan Mitchell going to Charlotte. And when they took Malik Monk, I'd be really angry, saying, jeez, like, that's, you know, how did they mess up my mock?
And they labored over that. That went down to the wire in Charlotte. There was a camp that wanted Mitchell. There was others that wanted Monk, and they went with Monk.
Yeah, but you have to give Utah credit. They traded up to get him, and you know, it looks like they have a future star in their hands. I mean, he's scoring more points per game in the NBA than he did in college, which is rare, and he's shooting the three better too. And I mean, it just shows you know, again, the trajectory that a guy is on. He's continuing to improve.
I was actually talking to a coach this morning, and his name came up, and he said to me, he reminds me of a young Dwayne Wade. The way when he goes downhill and he's going to the basket and picks up a head of steam and he goes into the Euro step or the helicopter move. He said it reminds me of a young Wade and maybe shoots it better at this point than Dwayne did. And so Now, you know, it remains to be seen whether he has that kind of a career. But to me, too, he is such a perfect marriage of player and coach. Really smart player, very curious mind. Like you said, knows his strengths and weaknesses. If you've spent any time around him, like just and talk to people around him, just hard on himself. And even for the success he's had early this year, you know, telling people like I'm on to the next one. And Quinn Snyder is such a great coach. Quinn's got such an expansive offensive mind and is creative and, you know, has always done. He did it with Gordon Hayward, really found a way to build an offense around Gordon. And you talk to coaches in the league and people who have to game plan. And Quinn's name is the one that always comes up about just great respect among his peers. And you just feel like that's a great match for him too. And as you know, so much of it with a rookie is just good fortune of getting in the right place and the right organization to see a guy flourish.
There's no doubt about it. And you, I think Mitchell has proven that. You don't want to take anything away from his talent and then proven that he's made, but being in the right situation has been great for him. Jason Tatum is another guy that had some real question marks going to the draft. He shot, you know, too many pull-up jumpers, too many long twos. He wasn't a great passer. He was indifferent at times defensively. You know, they played him at the four in the NBA, but he really wanted to be a two. And yeah, there was, you know, some real kind of back and forth there between scouts on what kind of, you know, NBA player he's going to be. And, you know, other than Ben Simmons and probably Donovan Mitchell, he's got to be right there in the mix for Rookie of the Year right now. And I think a lot of that has to do with his talent, but just as much has to do with Brad Stevens and Boston Celtics and being, you know, being able to play alongside guys like Al Horford and Kyrie Irving. And I mean, that, I think when you look at, okay, why is Lonzo Ball struggling? Why are some other guys not playing as well as we thought they would, you know, going to the draft? I mean, sometimes you have to look at their situation too.
Let me tell you about the Wish app and how shopping has been made easier for me, which comes in pretty handy this time of year. The convenience of Wish is tremendous. I'm basically shopping from my smartphone at a global marketplace. And one of the cool features is if I don't need my newly purchased product immediately, I'll get lower delivery prices than almost anywhere else. It's like they say, good things come to those who wait. Now, the app is easy to navigate on your device. It's scrollable, just like Facebook and Pinterest. So whether you're looking for the latest fashions, makeup, home goods, or electronics, you'll find it on Wish. By using Wish, you'll often find 60 to 90% off over 150 million products, and they have an infinite selection. You'll get the lowest prices. The products come directly from the source. No markups, no yearly fee, no middleman, and the best part of all, no need to overpay again. Wish is also the official mobile shopping partner of the LA Lakers. If you can wish it, you can own it. Now, a special offer for my listeners. Wish is offering all new users a free gift with purchase, but dedicated Wish lovers don't have to worry about being left out. All of my listeners can get 20% off your purchase by using my code WOJ, W-O-J. Just download and open your Wish app, find things that you didn't even know you needed, and enter my code WOJ for 20% off your purchase. Remember, if you can wish it, you can own it. Based on how you scouted Lonzo Ball, seeing him in high school, seeing him last season at UCLA, are you surprised by anything you've seen with him so far in the NBA? Did you expect something different? Again, it's early. It's really early. What did you think you'd see, and how did you project him down the line? Did you see him as a transcendent talent?
So the first time I saw Lonzo was after his sophomore year in high school. It was at the Adidas Nations. And I remember going up to his father, LeVar, asking him, hey, is it okay if I interview your son? He was like, yeah, sure. You know, nobody wants to really talk to him right now, so go for it. You know, and he was so humble and down to earth at that point. And so I, you know, interviewed Lonzo. I was not very impressed at the time because he didn't have a lot to say, and it was a very underwhelming interview. He's not the most, you know, well-spoken, articulate guy. He's a great teammate, and you know, he's developed in that regard. But so I remember watching him there at Adidas Nations. He couldn't shoot at all, really couldn't score, and thinking, you know, what's the big deal about this guy? People are really starting to hype him. Saw him again after, you know, his junior year, and we kind of felt the same way. And the senior year, you know, watched him a few times, and I really didn't like the way they played at Chino Hills. I thought, I was like, that's not basketball. You know, I'm not sure what they're doing there. Not coached. So I remember going into the year, we had him 14th on our mock draft, you know, and I was like, well, we're going to give the kid some due because, you know, he had a great McDonald's All-American week. And I was a little bit turned off by the fact that LeVar wouldn't let him play USA basketball, you know, because he got cut one time and he was offended by that. And so we said, okay, wait and see, you know, and then the season starts at UCLA and he's unbelievable, you know, and we rocketed him up into the top three, like the first week of the NCAA season. And he just rode that all year and he had a tremendous season. And, you know, he really grew on me because he's such a great teammate and, you know, they were winning. He transformed the culture of UCLA and he was making shots like crazy, which something that he had not done up until that point. He was always a very streaky shooter. And I remember kind of going into the college season thinking, you know, this guy is going to be Rondo. He's going to be Ricky Rubio. You know, that's going to be the type of point guard that he is. And, you know, he was scoring much better than those guys were at that age. So you think, well, you know, maybe there's something more there. And if you look at the season he's having, he's doing everything that we thought he would in terms of his passing and his rebounding and his steals. But he can't make a jump shot. And so that, you know, that's something that you have to wonder, is it going to correct itself? I mean, I think he's a better shooter than what he's shown. And I do think that the fact that he's been thrown into that mix, playing just an insane amount of minutes, alongside some very young players. Los Angeles is not an easy place to be a rookie. And not to mention all the circus around him with his dad. And so I think it's a little bit of an unhealthy situation there. I do think that had he gone to a playoff team somewhere where, you know, there were vets and he could kind of ease his way into things and without his dad kind of chirping in the background all the time about how great he is and all the, you know, unnecessary attention that comes along with that, I think he would be doing better. And I do think he's going to be a good NBA player, but, mm-hmm. you know, it remains to be seen if, you know, he'll be what we thought he was coming out of UCLA, which is really like the ideal situation for him.
I don't even really want to ask this, but I'm going to. LaMelo and LiAngelo, who are going now, both going to, LiAngelo has left UCLA. LaMelo now apparently will not go to UCLA. They both will go to Europe and play or somewhere overseas. You think of the skill set overseas that teams want. You know what it is. It reflects nothing of what these young, how they play. Just dribbling around, shooting the ball from 35. I mean, that's all you've seen with them. They're not Lonzo. There's clearly different players. Outside of a publicity stunt somewhere where somebody thinks that these two will sell tickets, where I can't imagine why they would anywhere. I don't imagine that. What's in store for them? Is there a league, a team that either could play outside of something that's a glorified beer league, YMCA league somewhere?
Not in Europe, not at the level that they want to play. If they want to go play in like the Irish league, you know, for $1,000 a month and a bus ticket, you know, like they could do that. I mean, I think that's a level that, I mean, LaMelo's not ready. He's 16 years old. He can't play in that league even, you know, but LiAngelo, what I've heard is that maybe Japan could be interesting because they're very interested in the marketing aspect of signing, you know, two kids like that. And it's one of these Mickey Mouse leagues where you can just shoot the ball every time and everybody there averages 35, 40 points a game and there's really good money. And, you know, they would be entertained by, you know, mm-hmm. LeVar, you know, it probably would wear thin after a week or two, but, you know, I could see that.
Hasn't worn thin here yet. So maybe
you never know.
Maybe there is there. It's just, you just want to believe they're building a career, like in whatever it is you're going to do. That you're building a career and there's some steps here that can lead to real development. The route that they're going to go here, if you want to say it's going to sell some shoes, maybe it will sell shoes. Is that sustainable for a lifetime? Does that going to bank like?
Because LiAngelo is not going to be a professional basketball player anyway. Yeah. So it would have been nice for him to get a UCLA degree, but I mean, they're rich, that family. They can afford to send him to college on their own dime. So I think that, you know, LaVar is probably looking at that and saying, let's try to milk this for whatever we can right now. You know, LiAngelo is going to be, you know, Lonzo's, you know, guy, probably his manager or something. He's going to live with him. You know, he's going to chase off, you know, paparazzi or that's going to be his job. But let's see what we can take us now. And we'll, he's not a dumb guy. So I think I think he knows that LiAngelo is not good. He's not going to be a professional basketball player. So what does it really matter?
Yeah, I guess. And again, I'm talking about this more than I wanted to. I mean, I'm really going further into this. I'm a hypocrite for doing it, but you know, I just wonder at 18 years old, 17, 18, bouncing around in Japan, whatever country, we're speculating where it could be, bouncing around somewhere that's going to be a life that it's one thing when Brandon Jennings went overseas to prepare for the draft and was going to get drafted and was a lottery pick in Europe. It was hard enough for him to do that in Italy, right? At 18, he had a tough year. Other players have done it. You know, Emmanuel Mudiay went to China for a fairly short time, came home. I just wonder how much joy there's going to be in that, how much a young person of that age is going to find it to be rewarding, fulfilling. I don't know. I hope it works out for him.
It's not going to last very long. I mean, they're going to be gone for a few weeks, and then they're going to come back, and then, you know, there'll be some reality TV show about it. And they're smart. They're going to find a way to cash in on this. Yeah. Maybe, they'll send some cameras there. They did that Facebook Live deal. You know, this will be new episodes on, you know, their reality TV show. And then, you know, after a month, they'll move on to the next thing, because that's what you have to do when you reality TV. Yeah.
Movement Watches was founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. With over a million watches sold to customers in 160-plus countries all around the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company. We get that holiday shopping can be tough, but thanks to Movement, all that gift-giving anxiety can disappear with the press of a button. You've heard me talk about Movement in the past, and I hope that you got yourself a watch. But now let's finish your holiday shopping and get a Movement watch for someone on your list. With Movement, you can skip the crowds and standing in crazy lines and find a gift they'll love at prices that beat department stores. I found just the right one for me. Truly, it's a great gift for anyone in your life. Movement watches start at just $95. At a department store, you're looking at $400 to $500. At such great prices, Movement watches make wonderful holiday gifts too. Classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. And today, get 15% off with free shipping and free returns by going to movement.com/woj. That's MVMT.com/Woj, W-O-J. So now is the time to step up your watch game. Go to movement.com, MVMT.com/Woj. Join the movement. Your most recent mock draft came out on ESPN in the past few days. You and Mike Schmitz and your evaluation and scouting, a lot of the players who are in your mock draft, you've been evaluating from high school or you know, European or international players, certainly over multiple years, you've seen them. You start to see guys at tournaments when they're 14, 15, 16, the great players, right? You know, when you're doing your mock for this time of year, how do you make decisions about who to move up? How much necessarily do you think there may be guys you know will end up in the top five, but you haven't seen them do enough yet? You want to wait. How do you approach a mock when we're still, you know, several months from a draft?
I don't like to speculate too much. I mean, it's my job. This is what we do. I mean, it's a business. I mean, we're trying to forecast down the road. But I really try to think about it as, you know, if the draft were tonight, how would things shape up? And we have Doncic at number one right now. And the reason for that is he had an incredible Eurobasket. I mean, him and Dragic won the European Championship. He had great games against Spanish national team with NBA players, against Latvia with Porzingis, against Evan Fournier in France. I mean, he did it in a way that no player in this draft has. And then he goes into the season and he's just dominant in the EuroLeague, which is incredible for an 18-year-old. We've never seen that before.
I mean, just for context, Kristaps Porzingis, the year before he came to New York and had a great rookie year, averaged what in that Spanish ACB league? Like 7-4?
Right.
Right? Something like that.
Yeah.
And Doncic is averaging...
on a losing team that almost got relegated. And he had some... Kristaps had some bad games in that league, and it's a learning process. Not easy. He wasn't playing in the EuroLeague. He was playing in the ACB on one of the worst teams in the ACB. So people don't really appreciate enough how amazing it is what Doncic is doing.
And Doncic is averaging what now?
He's averaging something like 16 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, something like that. But he's only playing like 25, 26 minutes. So I think... if you look at it on like a per 40 basis, he's almost averaging like a triple double with like 25 points. And he's doing it very, very efficiently at that. You know, guys in Europe, it's very rare for anybody to play more than, you know, 23, 24 minutes a game on those better teams. Especially, I mean, an 18-year-old, even to get into the game at that age is incredible. There's nobody else in European basketball that age other than maybe Janan Musa, who is also projected lottery, who is, you know, has a major role on a good team in a good league. And part of that is because this draft is a little bit down internationally. But part of that is just because Doncic is just that damn special.
You look at Marvin Bagley, the top players in this draft, Ayton at Arizona, who has been, you know, 7'1" player from the Bahamas, another freshman big. Mo Bamba, who's probably not in that conversation at number one, but a top five pick. I think you have him fifth in your mock. Will it be interesting for you to see how people judge when they're seeing a Marvin Bagley just be dominant, do things we haven't seen the best Duke players do it very early so far? And Ayton, who GMs came out of that Arizona game the other night against Texas A&M, and I had a couple say to me, hey, to me, that's the number one pick. And will it take courage for a team to pick Doncic number one when people are, let's say Bagley gets to the Final Four and, you know, Ayton has, you know, great season on an Arizona team that probably will, you know, probably maybe get it back on track a little bit. Do you think there's still that sort of bias in the public eye that it takes courage for a team to take a European player over if when guys see bigger, you know, maybe more physically dominant players, you know, certainly highly intelligent, gifted players that like that we're seeing out of this couple, you know, group of big guys in the States?
I think it takes more courage to take Bagley or Ayton because Doncic has done it against NBA players. Yeah, you saw him with Kristaps Porzingis switching onto him and him scoring on him repeatedly. You saw him kick Evan Fournier's ass. I mean, this is a near max player in the NBA. You saw him destroy Ricky Rubio in the semifinals of a European championship. You know, what Bagley and Ayton are doing is impressive, and those guys are great prospects, and they have just as good of a chance to go number one as Doncic. But still, they're doing it against kids. I think that Doncic is just a lot more proven, so I don't think it's going to take any courage at all. But I agree with you that when we get to March, Duke, you know, makes a great NCAA tournament run. Bagley is dominant. The hype is going to be so overwhelming, and it's going to be in your ear every single day here in the media. And it's in that regard, it might be a little bit tough to pass up, you know, Bagley or, I mean, Ayton. I think Arizona's going to recover, and they're going to be good too. So in that regard, I think Doncic is a little bit behind because the European Championship, you know, every day it gets further away from us. And, you know, as much as it's as easy as it is to go scout games in Madrid, it's still far away and it feels foreign. It is foreign, obviously. And so I see both sides of it. But if someone passes on Doncic and he goes third and then he ends up being rookie of the year and this unbelievable NBA player, I'm not going to want to hear anybody say, oh, how are we supposed to know it was in Europe? Hell no.
The holidays are coming up, and we all know what that means. Parties, presents, and ugly sweaters. The Art of Shaving can't help with the ugly sweaters, but they can help you impress everyone on your holiday list. This year, take gifting to the nines with the 12 shaving creams and more of Christmas, all formulated with essential oils and botanical ingredients. for virtually any man on your list. Build him a custom shaving kit complete with an elegant rose-handled safety razor and brush, and of course, a number one dad mug. Now get a head start on the holidays now. Listeners get 15% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code WOJ. To get this offer, visit theartofshaving.com, use my special promo code WOJ, W-O-J, to get 15% off your first order and free shipping. Or find a retail location near you for a consultation from the Art of Shaving's own master barbers. The conversation that's starting, that probably is going to start pretty soon here between the NBA and the Players Association about initial eligibility in the NBA or impacting the one-and-done rule. There's lots of different ideas out there about how the league might want to, what they might want to pursue, whether it's allowing high school players in, whether it's allowing everybody in, or having a rule where, you know, freshmen, if you go to college, you got to stay 2 years, although I don't know that there's much appetite for that with the union and maybe even in the league now. Lots of different conversations, all of it around the idea of, is the league going to allow high school players in some shape or form to enter the league, whether that's to go into the NBA to be able to do or have to do a year in the G League, be in the draft out of high school. What's your sense among teams, executives, front office people you talk to about their desire to go back into high school gyms? We haven't been in there since what?
No, like 2006.
2005. Amir Johnson was the last high school player taken, I believe, in the draft.
The Dwight Howard draft.
Yeah. What sense do you get from people about what they'd like to see or what they would want to see?
I've done a lot of research on this because I was in Portland at the PK80, just a few days after your report. And so this was like a hot topic on everybody's mind, and every GM was there scouting. So everybody, you know, wanted to talk about it. And the sense I got was that it's going to be very difficult for Adam Silver to push this through because there just isn't a real appetite among NBA teams to go back to scouting high school players. They really like the draft the way it is right now. They want to see guys go to college for, you know, for them, preferably 2 years, but at least one. And so I think there's going to be some real pushback on that front. And Adam Silver has so much juice now. I mean, he's done everything he's touched has turned to gold. So he's going to get what he wants done ultimately, I think. But the NBA folks are not happy about it, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and it may become to a question of what owners want versus maybe what their basketball people want, because a big part of this conversation is going to be built around kind of growing the G League, and you're seeing more teams own their own team, own their own minor league affiliate, own it, control it, pay the bills, hire all the staff, use it, you know, certainly as a direct satellite now with the two-way contracts where you have players going back and forth, and that if they're going to put money into this and more money, that the chance to get better players into the G League and to thin out the ranks of college basketball to get some players who might be able to sell tickets from a business point of view, you know, so maybe higher end players who will have to probably spend some time in there. There's only going to be very few players who come from high school who could probably spend the whole year in the NBA. Most would have to spend significant, if not all, their time there. And that's a real big consideration in this. And so that to me will be interesting, what the owners might want and the conversations Adam Silver will have. But one thing about Adam is I do believe he listens to his basketball people. He has a competition committee, and there's some things he drove through, like lottery reform. There were some people with lottery reform, they were either indifferent to it or didn't love it. He got some form of lottery reform through, but I think in general, he does listen to the basketball people, but there's no question this is an important issue to him. He's talked a lot about it. He talks about it publicly, privately. But again, too, he's got to go to the union. The union, this has to be collectively bargained. So there's a lot of factors in this one.
Yeah, you're spot on about the G League element. I think that's really, you know, the agenda that if it does happen, that's what they're, I don't think it's a moral issue as much as it is a business issue. I mean, if they can take a piece out of the NCAA tournament, TV pie, they're gonna take a swing at that.
This has nothing to do, and I don't think it's even a consideration, about what is fair to the player, what his right is. They may say, ah, hey, listen, a lot of these guys don't want to be in college. We're doing them a favor. A lot of these guys, they don't even want to be there, so let's allow them. It's not about that. It's not about the players' rights. It's never been. It's about their business model. And that's not even a criticism, but like, one of the big issues with the league, and I think in the commissioner's office, the league office, is can they develop better players by getting them in their own pipeline sooner? They look at the European model. I think Adam's talked about that, looking in Europe and how they develop players. These academies now are up and running all over the world. And ultimately, you know, I think there's a hope they'd have these academies here and maybe partner with USA Basketball and push aside AAU basketball, push aside the summer circuit. And I do know it bothers a lot of people in high levels in the league that, let's say for your traditional one-and-done player, that he spends 2 years prior getting to college traveling around playing 7 AAU games in a weekend, flying around, just playing AAU games. And then he spends his freshman year of college somewhere where there's a 20-hour rule on when they can be in the gym and being coached and all those factors. Are those the best ways? Is there a better way to develop, to have these players more fully developed when they walk into the league?
I think these are all really important points that you bring up, but I think the NBA needs to start addressing those first before they change the one-and-done rule, because the consequences you're going to have from changing that rule are going to trickle down all the way down to